Chapter 69. At first light, the Titanic still lived. There was no rhyme or reason for her continued existence. She still wallowed aimlessly, broadside on to the sea and wind, trapped in the churning turmoil of the tormented waves left in the wake of the departing hurricane. Like a dazed fighter, taking a fearful beating while hanging on to the ropes, she rose drunkenly over the 30-foot crests, shouldering each one, taking salt spray across her boat deck, and then struggling free and somehow staggering upright in time for the next assault. To Captain Porotkin, as he stared through his binoculars, the Titanic looked like a doomed ship. Her rusty old hull plates had been subjected to a stress far beyond anything he thought they could stand. He could see the popped rivets and opened seams, and he guessed that she was taking water in 100 places along her hull. What he could not see were the exhausted men of the salvage crew, the SEALs, and the Navy tugmen, laboring shoulder to shoulder deep in the black hell under the waterline in a desperate effort to keep the derelict afloat. From Porotkin's viewpoint, safe from the elements inside the wheelhouse of the Mikhail Kurkov, it seemed a miracle that the Titanic hadn't vanished during the night. Yet she still clung to life, even though she was down a good 20 feet at the bow and was listing nearly 30 degrees to starboard. "Any word from Captain Prevloff?" he asked, without taking his eyes from the glass.
"Nothing, sir," answered his first officer.
"I fear the worst has happened," Porotkin said. "I see no sign that Prevloff is in command of the derelict."
"There, sir,"
the first officer said, pointing, "atop the remains of the aft mast. It looks like a Russian pennant." Porotkin studied the tiny, frayed cloth through the glasses as it snapped in the wind. "Unfortunately, the star on the pennant is white rather than the red of our Soviet ensign." He sighed. "I must assume that the boarding mission has failed."
"Perhaps Captain Prevloff has had no time to report his situation."
"There is no time left. American search planes will be here within the hour." Porotkin pounded his fist in frustration on the bridge counter. "Damn Prevloff," he muttered angrily. "Let us fervently hope our final option will not be required." His exact words. "He is the fortunate one. He may even be dead, and it is I who must take the responsibility for destroying the Titanic and all who remain on board her." The first officer's face paled. His body stiffened.
"There is no alternative, sir?"
Porotkin shook his head. "The orders were clear. We must obliterate the ship rather than let her fall into the hands of the Americans." Porotkin took a linen handkerchief from his pocket and wiped his eyes. "Have the crew ready the nuclear missile carrier and steer a course 10 miles north of the Titanic for our firing position." The first officer stared at Porotkin for a long moment, his face void of expression. Then he slowly wheeled and made for the radio telephone and ordered the helmsman to steer 15 degrees to the north. 30 minutes later, all was in readiness. The Mikhail Kurkov dug her bow into the swells at the position laid for the missile launch, as Porotkin stood behind the radar operator. "Any hard sightings?" he asked. 8 jet aircraft, 120 miles west, closing rapidly.
"Surface vessels?"
2 small ships bearing 245, 21 miles southwest. "That would be the tugs returning," the first officer said. Porotkin nodded.
"It's the aircraft that concern me. They will be over us in 10 minutes. Is the nuclear warhead armed?"
"Yes, sir."
"Then begin the countdown."
The first officer gave the order over the phone, and then they moved outside and watched from the starboard bridge wing as the forward cargo hatch swung smoothly aside, and a 26-foot Stosky surface-to-surface missile slowly rose from its concealed tube into the gusty dawn air.
"1 minute to firing," came a missile technician's voice over the bridge speaker.
Porotkin aimed his glasses at the Titanic in the distance. He could just make out her outline against the gray clouds that crawled along the horizon. A barely perceptible shiver gripped his body.
His eyes reflected a distant, sad look. He knew he would be forever cursed among sailors as the captain who sent the helpless and resurrected ocean liner back to her grave beneath the sea. He was standing, braced and waiting for the roar of the missile's rocket engine, and then the great explosion that would pulverize the Titanic into thousands of molten particles, when he heard the sound of running footsteps from the wheelhouse, and the radio operator burst onto the bridge wing. "Captain," he blurted, "an urgent signal from an American submarine."
30 seconds to firing," the voice droned over the intercom.
There was unmistakable panic in the radio operator's eyes as he thrust the message into Porotkin's hands. It read, "USS Dragonfish to USSR Mikhail Kurkov. Derelict vessel RMS Titanic under protection of United States Navy. Any overt act of aggression on your part will result in immediate, repeat immediate, retaliatory attack. Signed, Captain USS Submarine Dragonfish."
10 seconds and counting," came the disembodied voice of the missile technician over the speaker.
7, 6.
Porotkin looked up with the clear, unworried expression of a man who has just received ₹1,000,000 through the mail.
5, 4, 3. "Stop the countdown," he ordered in precise tones, so there could be no misunderstanding, no misinterpretation.
"Stop countdown," the first officer repeated into the bridge phone, his face beaded with sweat.
"And secure the missile."
"Good," Porotkin said curtly. A smile spread across his face. "Not exactly what I was told to do, but I think Soviet naval authorities will see it my way. After all, the Mikhail Kurkov is the finest ship of her kind in the world. We wouldn't want to throw her away because of a senseless and foolish order from a man who is undoubtedly dead, now would we?"
"I am in complete accord," the first officer smiled back. "Our superiors will also be interested to learn that, in spite of all our sophisticated detection gear, we failed to discover the presence of an alien submarine practically on our doorstep. American undersea penetration methods must truly be highly advanced."
"I feel sure the Americans will be just as interested in learning that our oceanographic research vessels carry concealed missiles."
"Your order, sir?"
Porotkin watched the Stosky missile as it sank back into its tube. "Set a course for home." He turned and peered across the sea in the direction of the Titanic. What had happened to Prevlov and his men? Were they alive or dead? Would he ever know the true facts? Overhead, the clouds began turning from gray to white, and the wind dropped to a brisk breeze. A solitary seagull emerged from the brightening sky and began circling the Soviet ship. Then, as if heeding a more urgent call to the south, it dipped its wings and flew off toward the Titanic.